in the beginning of the theoretical introduction is quoted Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Now you have to understand that Rothschild is one of the most important names in the evil conspiracy of any on your planet. That man lived from 1743 to 1812 and funded wars, conspiracies, and with his death, the Rothschild lineage did not end. That group is still major, major participants in everything that happens on your place. At any rate, he's quoted, and you hear this quite a lot, including from me. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. Ponder that very carefully, Chilos, because this is absolutely the way it is. Today's silent weapons technology is an outgrowth of a simple idea discovered, succinctly expressed, and effectively applied by the quoted Mr. Mayor Rothschild. Mr. Rothschild discovered the missing passive component of economic theory known as economic inductance. He, of course, did not think of his discovery in those 20th century terms. And to be sure, mathematical analysis had to wait for the second industrial revolution. The rise of the theory of mechanics and electronics, and then finally the invention of the electronic computer before it could be effectively applied in the control of the world economy. General energy concepts. In the study of energy systems, there always appear three elementary concepts. These are potential energy, kinetic energy, and energy dissipation. Corresponding to those concepts, there are three idealized, essentially pure physical counterparts called passive components. Number one, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of potential energy is associated with the physical property called elasticity or stiffness, and can be represented by a stretched spring or an elastic band, rubber band, if you will. And I would hope if you are having a bleed through, which sounds like a lawnmower, that you will understand that it is a lawnmower. And we keep moving to different parts of the building to escape it, but the neighbors are mowing and thus and so. So we will be patient. In electronic science, potential energy is stored in a capacitor instead of a spring. This property is called capacitance instead of elasticity or stiffness. Second, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of kinetic energy is associated with a physical property called inertia or mass, and can be represented by a mass or a flywheel, which is in motion. In electronic science, kinetic energy is stored in an inductor or in a magnetic field instead of in mass. This property is called inductance instead of inertia. And number three, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of energy dissipation is associated with a physical property called friction or resistance, and can be represented by a dashpot or other device which converts system energy into heat. In electronic science, dissipation of energy is performed by an element called either a resistor or a conductor. The term resistor being the one generally used to express the concept of friction, and the term conductor being generally used to describe a more ideal device, that is, a wire, employed to convey electric energy efficiently from one location to another location. The property of a resistance or conductor is measured as either resistance or conductance, reciprocals. Now, if you have had access to our work with Mr. Tesla, a lot of this will now begin to make sense, because we spoke a lot about resistors and capacitors and inductors and inductance, etc., in some of those early journals. So I can't ever urge you quite enough to not give up, especially if you are of scientific interest at all, to go, and you will begin to see these factual outlays making sense to you. In economics, these three energy concepts are associated with, number one, economic capacitance. That is capital, money, stock inventory, investments in buildings and durables, etc. Two, economic conductance, goods, production, flow, coefficients. And third, economic inductance, or services, the influence of the population of industry on output. All of the mechanical theory developed in the study of one energy system, that is, perhaps mechanics, electronics, and so forth, can be immediately applied in the study of any other energy system. That means in socioeconomics, as well as any other energy system. All of the mathematical theory developed in the study of one energy system can always be applied straight across. Mr. Rothschild's energy discovery. What Mr. Rothschild had discovered was the basic principle of power, influence, and control over people as applied to economics. That principle is, when you assume the appearance of power, people soon give it to you. And Chilos, this is very true. They don't even have to be powerful. If they just appear to be and tell you that they are, you will accept it. And especially if an authority tells you that they are and prints it and publishes it, they become expert and you don't question it. That's part of the fooling technology. What Mr. Rothschild had discovered was that currency or deposit loan accounts had the required appearance of power that could be used to induce people, which is inductance, with people now corresponding to a magnetic field, into surrendering their real wealth in exchange for a promise of greater wealth instead of real compensation. They would put up real collateral in exchange for a loan of promissory notes. Mr. Rothschild found that he could issue more notes than he had backing for, so long as he had someone's stock of gold as a persuader to show to his customers. Now, do you really think it's changed very much? Hardly at all. Mr. Rothschild loaned his promissory notes to individuals and to governments. These would create overconfidence. Then he would make money scarce. He'd tighten the control of the system and collect the collateral through the obligation of contracts. The cycle was then simply repeated and repeated and repeated, right ad nauseum unto today. Then he would control the availability of currency to determine who would win the war. That government which agreed to give him control of its economic system got his support. Collection of debts was guaranteed by economic aid to the enemy of the debtor. The profit derived from this economic methodology made Mr. Rothschild all the more wealthy and all the more able to extend his wealth. He found that the public greed would allow currency to be printed by government order beyond the limits. That's inflation, precious ones. A backing in precious metal or the production of goods and services, which is the gross national product, or what you call the GNP. So our next topic is the apparent capital as paper inductor. In this structure, credit, presented as a pure circuit element called currency, has the appearance of capital, but is in fact negative capital. Hence, it has the appearance of service, but is in fact indebtedness or debt. It is therefore an economic inductance instead of an economic capacitance, and if balanced in no other way, will be balanced by the negation of population, war, and genocide. The total goods and services represents real capital called the gross national product, and currency may be printed up to this level and still represent economic capacitance. But currency printed beyond this level is subtractive, represents the introduction of economic inductance, and constitutes notes of indebtedness. War is therefore the balancing of the system by killing the true creditors, which is the public, which you have been taught to exchange true value for inflated currency. Then falling back on whatever is left of the resources of nature and the regeneration of those resources. Now the final key to economic control had to wait until there was sufficient data and high-speed computing equipment to keep close watch on the economic oscillations created by price shocking and excess paper energy credits, that is, paper inductance / inflation. Same thing. Now, all of these years, before there could come a massive breakthrough, you see, all of this particular system was getting perfected, fully knowing that as that technology would increase, it could only add to the plan, not subtract from it. So the plan was already underway. The aviation field, as it were, provided the greatest evolution in economic engineering by way of the mathematical theory of shock testing. In this process, a projectile is fired from an airframe on the ground, and the impulse of the recoil is monitored by vibration transducers connected to the airframe and wired to chart recorders. By studying the echoes or reflections of the recoil impulse in the airframe, it is possible then to discover critical vibrations in the structure of the airframe, which either vibrations of the engine or aileron vibrations of the wings or a combination of the two might reinforce, resulting in a resonant self-destruction of the airframe in flight as an aircraft. From the standpoint of engineering, this means that the strengths and weaknesses, say, of the structure of the airframe in terms of vibrational energy can then be discovered and manipulated. So let's look at the application in economics. To use this method of airframe shock testing in economic engineering, the prices of commodities are shocked, and therefore the public consumer reaction is monitored. The resulting echoes of the economic shock are interpreted theoretically by computers, and the psychoeconomic structure of the economy is thus discovered. It is by this process that partial, differential, and difference matrices are discovered that can define the family household and make possible its evaluation as an economic industry. That's dissipative consumer structure. Then the response of the household to future shocks can be predicted and in turn manipulated. And society becomes a well-regulated animal with its reins under the control of a sophisticated computer-regulated social energy bookkeeping system, no more, no less. You have to look at these things as factual, interrelated, all connected to all possibilities. If you effort to separate out something, which is another method of training you people, the government, for instance, will have separation of church and state, and we'll separate this, and we'll separate one neighbor and one class from another. And through this division, you can really rapidly gain control. So you have to realize that all is connected, even in concept, and that all forms of energy are equal to the same form of energy, being only one, ultimately. So we have to look at all of these possibilities. Eventually, every individual element of the structure comes under computer control through a knowledge of personal preferences. Such knowledge is guaranteed by computer association of consumer preferences, universal product code, that old UPC. I think you call them zebra stripes or something. Zebra stripe pricing codes, right, on packages and so forth, with identified consumers, identified via association with the use of a credit card and later a permanent tattooed body number invisible under normal ambient illumination. You see, they've thought of it all. So let's summarize this little portion. Economics is only a social extension of a natural energy system. It also has its three passive components. Because of the distribution of wealth and the lack of communication and consequent lack of data, the field has been the last energy field for which a knowledge of these three passive components has been developed. It required, you see, that waiting period until you could have it integrated into a computer system which could sort massive amounts of data. Since energy is the key to all activity on the face of the earth, it follows that in order to attain a monopoly of energy, raw materials, goods and services, and to establish a world system of slave labor, it becomes necessary to have a first strike capability in the field of economics. In order to maintain the position, it is necessary that we, remember, this is an instructor speaking, have absolute first knowledge of the science of control over all economic factors and the first experience at engineering the world economy. In order to achieve such sovereignty, we must at least achieve this one end, that the public will not make either the logical or mathematical connection between economics and the other energy science, or learn to apply such knowledge. This is becoming increasingly difficult to control because more and more businesses are making demands upon their computer programmers to create and apply mathematical models for the management of those businesses. It is only a matter of time before the new breed of private programmer economists will catch on to the far-reaching implications of the work begun at Harvard in 1948. The speed with which they can communicate their warning to the public will largely depend upon how effective we have been at controlling the media, subverting education, and keeping the public distracted with matters of no real importance. And I would guess that if you really look at and analyze what was just said, you will agree they have really done a job on you. Now let's look at the economic model. Economics, as a social energy science, has a first objective, the description of the complex way in which any given unit of resource is used to satisfy some economic want. And this is called the Leontief matrix, L-E-O-N-T-I-E-F, labeled after Leontief, the man. The first objective, when it is extended to get the most product from the least or limited resources, comprises that objective of general military and industrial logistics known as operations research. The Harvard Economic Research Project, 1948, and still ongoing, was an extension of World War II operations research. Its purpose was to discover the science of controlling an economy, at first the American economy and then the world economy. It was felt that with sufficient mathematical foundation and data, it would be nearly as easy to predict and control the trend of an economy as to predict and control the trajectory of a projectile. Such has proven to be the case. Moreover, the economy has been transformed into a guided missile on target. The immediate aim of the Harvard project was to discover the economic structure, what forces change that structure, how the behavior of the structure can be predicted, and how it can be manipulated. What was needed was well-organized knowledge of the mathematical structures and relationships of investment, production, distribution, and consumption. To make a short story of it all, it was discovered that an economy obeyed the same laws as electricity, and that all of the mathematical theory and practical and computer know-how developed for the electronic field could be directly applied in the study of economics. Please hearken back to the lessons of Germain. What is God? What is thought? What is electricity? All you see is one thing. And knowing what it is grants you the ability to control it. And they discovered this. So you, who are just awakening and coming into your own knowledge of these things, are a little bit behind. This discovery was not openly declared, and its more subtle implications were and are kept a closely guarded secret. For example, that in an economic model, human life is generated when opening a switch connected to an active inductor is mathematically analogous to the initiation, friends, of war. The greatest hurdle which theoretical economists faced was the accurate description of the household as an industry. This is a challenge because consumer purchases are a matter of choice, which in turn is influenced by income, price, and other economic factors. This hurdle was cleared in an indirect and in statistically approximate way by an application of shock testing to determine the current characteristics called current technology coefficients of a household industry. Finally, because problems in theoretical economics can be translated very easily into problems in theoretical electronics and the solution translated back again, it follows that only a book of language translation and concept definition needed to be written for economics. The remainder then could be gotten from standard works on mathematics and electronics. This makes the publication of books on advanced economics quite unnecessary, and it certainly simplifies project security. An ideal industry is defined as a device which receives value from other industries in several forms and then converts it into one specific product for sales and distribution onto other industries. It can have several inputs, but one output. What the public normally thinks of as one industry is really an industrial complex where several industries under one roof produce one or more products. And a pure single output industry could be represented oversimply, really, by a circuit book or a circuit block, a book I refer to, Hatton refers to as a unit or of instructions or a block, say with diagrams. You can follow then the flow of products from industry one to industry two to industry three and so on around. And we're not going to try to draw those pictures for you. Let us just move on and say that there are three industrial classes, and we'll break those down, because industries do fall into those three categories or classes, and they are categorized by type of output. Class one, capital resources, or capital and resources. Class two, goods. That's commodities or use, dissipative. Class three, services, action of the population. So in class one, we'll talk about that a little bit. These are industries existing at three levels. One, nature, sources of energy and raw materials. Two, government, which is printing of currency equal to gross national product, the GNP, and extension of currency in excess of GNP. And number three, banking, loaning of money for interest and extension, counterfeiting of economic value through deposit loan accounts. And here, extension is equal to inflation, and that's important to remember. Now for class two, which was goods. These industries exist as producers of tangible or consumer dissipated products. This sort of activity is usually recognized and labeled by the public as an industry. And then you have class three, those services. These service industries are those which have service rather than a tangible product as to their output. These industries are called, one, households, and two, governments. Their output is human activity of a very mechanical sort, and their basis is population. The whole economic system can be represented by three industry models if one allows the names of the outputs to be number one, capital, number two, goods, and number three, services. The problem with this representation is that it would not show the influence of, say, the textile industry on the ferrous metal industry. This is because both the textile industry and the ferrous metal industry would be contained within a single classification called the, quote, goods industry, end quote. Now, but this process of combining or aggregating these two industries under one system block, they would then lose their economic individuality. So let's look at let us call it the E-dash model, the E model. A national economy consists of simultaneous flows of production, distribution, consumption, and investment. If all of these elements, including labor and human functions, are assigned a numerical value in like units of measure, say $1939, upon this flow can be further represented by a current flow in an electronic circuit, and its behavior can be predicted and manipulated with absolute precision. Very useful precision. The three ideal passive energy components of electronics, the capacitor, the resistor, and the conductor, correspond to the three ideal passive energy components of economics called the pure industries of capital, goods, and services, respectively. Economic capacitance represents the storage of capital in one form or another. Economic conductance represents the level of conductance of materials for the production of goods. Economic inductance represents the inertia of economic value in motion. This is a population phenomenon known as services. Let's look at economic inductance. I understand that this is pretty boring at this point, unless you have a mathematical mind that functions and can visualize these things and interrelate them. I'm having to give you this information as background so that when we get on with what is actually laid forth in controlling you, you'll be able to understand. If you go back and listen to this or study it with written material, you'll be able to look at it and see how they came up with it, what they have done, and how close you are to their plan having been fulfilled. An electrical inductor, by that I mean a coil of wire, has an electric current as its primary phenomenon and a magnetic field as its secondary phenomenon, which is inertia. Now, corresponding to this, an economic inductor has a flow of economic value as its primary phenomenon and a population field as its secondary phenomenon of inertia. When the flow of economic value, that is money, diminishes, the human population field collapses in order to keep the economic value, money, flowing. And the extremes, war. This public inertia is a result of consumer buying habits, expected standard of living, and so forth, and is generally a phenomenon of self-preservation. So you have some inductive factors to consider. Three major ones. One, the population. Two, magnitude of the economic activities of the government. Three, the method of financing these government activities. And there you have it. And I believe that you will be able to see these as we break them down. So let's just have a little translation here and give a few examples. Let's say, we'll do it in energy form. We'll call it charge. These are the coulombs. That, by that I mean C-O-U-L-O-M-B-S for you people who label these things. The same represented as dollars, and we just used the term 1939 so that you could have some mental measure of what we're talking about. So then let's talk about flow, current, flow, slash, current. Amperes, coulombs per second, the same as dollars or the equivalent of dollars of flow per year. The motivating force, we'll call that volts or dollars, and we'll call that output and demand. Then we move on to conductance. That's amperes per volt or dollars of flow per year per dollar demand. And then capacitance. That would be coulombs per volt or equivalent of dollars of production, inventory, stock per dollar demand. Now we move into time flow relationships and self-destructive oscillations. I know it's getting harder for you. We'll get to the interesting part in a minute. We have to take an ideal industry, and that can be symbolized electronically in many various ways. The simplest way is to represent a demand by a voltage and a supply by a current. When this is done, the relationship between the two becomes what is called an admittance, which can result from three economic factors. One, hindsight flow, two, present flow, and three, foresight flow. Foresight flow is a result of that property of living entities to cause energy, which is food, to be stored for a period of low energy. Example, a winter season. It consists of demands made upon an economic system for that period of low energy, the winter season. In a production industry, it takes several forms, one of which is known as production stock or inventory. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure capital industry, is represented by capacitance, and the stock or resource is represented by a stored charge. Satisfaction of an industry demand suffers a lag because of the loading effect of inventory priorities. Present flow. This ideally involves no delays, and you are a present flow, I want it now, group of people. You've been trained to that. They have now already perfected that forethought, if you will, and have trained you not to pay any attention in your desiring to that hindsight flow, which we'll get to. So in the present flow ideally involves no delays. It is, so to speak, input today for output today. A hand-to-mouth flow, if you will. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure-use industry, is represented by a conductance, which is then a simple economic value, a dissipative element, something you dissipate, you use. Hindsight flow is known as habit or simply inertia. In electronics, this phenomenon is the characteristics of an inductor, economic analog, a pure service industry, in which a current flow, economic analog, is flow of money, creates a magnetic field, the economic analog is active human population, which if the current, represented as money flow, begins to diminish, collapse or collapses, the equivalent war is required to maintain the current, the flow of money, energy, etc. Other large alternatives to war as economic inductors or economic flywheels are an open-minded social welfare program or enormous but fruitful open-minded space programs. The problem with stabilizing the economic system is that there is too much demand on account of too much greed, and secondly, too much population. So now we're getting there, aren't we? This, in turn, creates excessive economic inductance, which can only be balanced with economic capacitance. In other words, true resources or value, that is, in goods or services. The social welfare program is nothing more than an open-ended credit balance system which creates a false capital industry to give non-productive people a roof over their heads and food in their stomachs. This can be useful, however, because the recipients become state property in return for the, quote, gift. A standing army for the elite. For he who pays the piper picks the tune. Those who get hooked on the economic drug must go to the elite for their picks. In this, the method of introducing large amounts of stabilizing capital or capacitance is by borrowing on the future credit of the world. This is a fourth law of motion on set and consists of performing an action and leaving the system before the reflected reaction returns to the point of action, a delayed reaction. The means of surviving the reaction is by changing the system before the reaction can return. By this means, politicians become popular in their own time and the public pays for it later. In fact, the measure of such a politician is a delayed time. The same thing is achieved by government by printing money beyond the limit of the gross national product or allowing it to be printed. An economic process called inflation. This puts a large quantity of money into the hands of the public and maintains a balance against the greed, creates a false self-confidence in them, and for a while stays the wolf from the door. But let me tell you, it is only for a little while. They must eventually resort to war in order to balance the account, because war ultimately is merely the act of destroying the predator. And politicians are the publicly hired hitmen that justify the act to keep the responsibility and blood off the public conscience. We'll get on there and look at the consent factors and social economic structuring a little bit later. If the people really cared about their fellow man, they would control their appetites, greed, procreation, etc., so that they would not have to operate on a credit or welfare social system which steals from the worker to satisfy the bum. But look what's happened. They have trained you to desire just the opposite. And not only to desire it, but to demand it. Without responsibility, without thought of consequence, always let the government do something about it. But I don't want to pay for it. I want mine now, and to hell with you. So you've arrived at massive, massive problems. I think we're near enough to the end of this side of the tape that we'll just move on to tape two before we move on in the subject matter. Thank you. In the beginning of the theoretical introduction is quoted Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Now you have to understand that Rothschild is one of the most important names in the evil conspiracy of any on your planet. That man lived from 1743 to 1812 and funded wars, conspiracies, and with his death, the Rothschild lineage did not end. That group is still major, major participants in everything that happens on your place. At any rate, he's quoted, and you hear this quite a lot, including from me. Give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. Ponder that very carefully, chilos, because this is absolutely the way it is. Today's silent weapons technology is an outgrowth of a simple idea discovered, succinctly expressed, and effectively applied by the quoted Mr. Mayor Rothschild. Mr. Rothschild discovered the missing passive component of economic theory known as economic inductance. He, of course, did not think of his discovery in those 20th century terms, and to be sure, mathematical analysis had to wait for the second industrial revolution. The rise of the theory of mechanics and electronics, and then finally the invention of the electronic computer before it could be effectively applied in the control of the world economy. General energy concepts. In the study of energy systems, there always appear three elementary concepts. These are potential energy, kinetic energy, and energy dissipation. Corresponding to those concepts, there are three idealized, essentially pure physical counterparts called passive components. Number one, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of potential energy is associated with a physical property called elasticity or stiffness, and can be represented by a stretched spring or an elastic band. Rubber band, if you will. And I would hope if you are having a bleed through, which sounds like a lawnmower, that you will understand that it is a lawnmower. And we keep moving to different parts of the building to escape it, but the neighbors are mowing and thus and so. So we will be patient. In electronic science, potential energy is stored in a capacitor instead of a spring. This property is called capacitance instead of elasticity or stiffness. Second, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of kinetic energy is associated with a physical property called inertia or mass, and can be represented by a mass or a flywheel, which is in motion. In electronic science, kinetic energy is stored in an inductor or in a magnetic field instead of in mass. This property is called inductance instead of inertia. And number three, in the science of physical mechanics, the phenomenon of energy dissipation is associated with a physical property called friction or resistance, and can be represented by a dashpot or other device which converts system energy into heat. In electronic science, dissipation of energy is performed by an element called either a resistor or a conductor, the term resistor being the one generally used to express the concept of friction, and the term conductor being generally used to describe a more ideal device, that is, a wire, employed to convey electric energy efficiently from one location to another location. The property of a resistance or conductor is measured as either resistance or conductance, reciprocals. Now, if you have had access to our work with Mr. Tesla, a lot of this will now begin to make sense, because we spoke a lot about resistors and capacitors and inductors and inductance, etc., in some of those early journals. So I can't ever urge you quite enough to not give up, especially if you are of scientific interest at all, to go, and you will begin to see these factual outlays making sense to you. In economics, these three energy concepts are associated with, number one, economic capacitance, that is capital, money, stock inventory, investments in buildings and durables, etc. Two, economic conductance, goods, production flow coefficients. And third, economic inductance or services, the influence of the population of industry on output. All of the mechanical theory developed in the study of one energy system, that is perhaps mechanics, electronics, and so forth, can be immediately applied in the study of any other energy system. That means in socioeconomics, as well as any other energy system. All of the mathematical theory developed in the study of one energy system can always be applied straight across. Mr. Rothschild's energy discovery. What Mr. Rothschild had discovered was the basic principle of power, influence, and control over people as applied to economics. That principle is, when you assume the appearance of power, people soon give it to you. And Chilos, this is very true. They don't even have to be powerful. If they just appear to be and tell you that they are, you will accept it. And especially if an authority tells you that they are and prints it and publishes it, they become expert and you don't question it. That's part of the pooling technology. What Mr. Rothschild had discovered was that currency or deposit loan accounts had the required appearance of power that could be used to induce people, which is inductance, with people now corresponding to a magnetic field, into surrendering their real wealth in exchange for a promise of greater wealth instead of real compensation. They would put up real collateral in exchange for a loan of promissory notes. Mr. Rothschild found that he could issue more notes than he had backing for, so long as he had someone's stock of gold as a persuader to show to his customers. Now, do you really think it's changed very much? Hardly at all. Mr. Rothschild loaned his promissory notes to individuals and to governments. These would create overconfidence. Then he would make money scarce. He'd tighten the control of the system and collect the collateral through the obligation of contracts. The cycle was then simply repeated and repeated and repeated, right ad nauseum unto today. Then he would control the availability of currency to determine who would win the war. That government which agreed to give him control of its economic system got his support. Collection of debts was guaranteed by economic aid to the enemy of the debtor. The profit derived from this economic methodology made Mr. Rothschild all the more wealthy and all the more able to extend his wealth. He found that the public greed would allow currency to be printed by government order beyond the limits. That's inflation, precious ones. A backing in precious metal or the production of goods and services, which is the gross national product, or what you call the GNP. So our next topic is the apparent capital as paper inductor. In this structure, credit, presented as a pure circuit element called currency, has the appearance of capital, but is in fact negative capital. Hence, it has the appearance of service, but is in fact indebtedness or debt. It is, therefore, an economic inductance instead of an economic capacitance, and if balanced in no other way, will be balanced by the negation of population, war, and genocide. The total goods and services represents real capital called the gross national product, and currency may be printed up to this level and still represent economic capacitance. But currency printed beyond this level is subtractive, represents the introduction of economic inductance, and constitutes notes of indebtedness. War is therefore the balancing of the system by killing the true creditors, which is the public, which you have been taught to exchange true value for inflated currency. Then falling back on whatever is left of the resources of nature and the regeneration of those resources. Now, the final key to economic control had to wait until there was sufficient data and high-speed computing equipment to keep close watch on the economic oscillations created by price shocking and excess paper energy credits, that is, paper inductance / inflation. Same thing. Now, all of these years, before there could come a massive breakthrough, you see, all of this particular system was getting perfected, fully knowing that as that technology would increase, it could only add to the plan, not subtract from it. So the plan was already underway. The aviation field, as it were, provided the greatest evolution in economic engineering by way of the mathematical theory of shock testing. In this process, a projectile is fired from an airframe on the ground, and the impulse of the recoil is monitored by vibration transducers connected to the airframe and wired to chart recorders. By studying the echoes or reflections of the recoil impulse in the airframe, it is possible then to discover critical vibrations in the structure of the airframe, which either vibrations of the engine or aileron vibrations of the wings or a combination of the two might reinforce, resulting in a resonant self-destruction of the airframe in flight as an aircraft. From the standpoint of engineering, this means that the strengths and weaknesses, say, of the structure of the airframe in terms of vibrational energy can then be discovered and manipulated. So let's look at the application in economics. To use this method of airframe shock testing in economic engineering, the prices of commodities are shocked, and therefore the public consumer reaction is monitored. The resulting echoes of the economic shock are interpreted theoretically by computers, and the psychoeconomic structure of the economy is thus discovered. It is by this process that partial differential and difference matrices are discovered that can define the family household and make possible its evaluation as an economic industry. That's dissipative consumer structure. Then the response of the household to future shocks can be predicted and in turn manipulated. And society becomes a well-regulated animal with its reins under the control of a sophisticated computer-regulated social energy bookkeeping system, no more, no less. You have to look at these things as factual, interrelated, all connected to all possibilities. If you ever to separate out something, which is another method of training you people, the government, for instance, will have separation of church and state, and we'll separate this, and we'll separate one neighbor and one class from another. And through this division, you can really rapidly gain control. So you have to realize that all is connected, even in concept, and that all forms of energy are equal to the same form of energy, being only one, ultimately. So we have to look at all of these possibilities. Eventually, every individual element of the structure comes under computer control through a knowledge of personal preferences. Such knowledge is guaranteed by computer association of consumer preferences, universal product code, that old UPC. I think you call them zebra stripes or something. Zebra stripe pricing codes, right, on packages and so forth. With identified consumers, identified via association with the use of a credit card and later a permanent tattooed body number, invisible under normal ambient illumination. You see, they've thought of it all. So let's summarize this little portion. Economics is only a social extension of a natural energy system. It also has its three passive components. Because of the distribution of wealth and the lack of communication and consequent lack of data, the field has been the last energy field for which a knowledge of these three passive components has been developed. It required, you see, that waiting period until you could have it integrated into a computer system which could sort massive amounts of data. Since energy is the key to all activity on the face of the earth, it follows that in order to attain a monopoly of energy, raw materials, goods and services, and to establish a world system of slave labor, it becomes necessary to have a first strike capability in the field of economics. In order to maintain the position, it is necessary that we, remember, this is an instructor speaking, have absolute first knowledge of the science of control over all economic factors and the first experience at engineering the world economy. In order to achieve such sovereignty, we must at least achieve this one end, that the public will not make either the logical or mathematical connection between economics and the other energy science, or learn to apply such knowledge. This is becoming increasingly difficult to control because more and more businesses are making demands upon their computer programmers to create and apply mathematical models for the management of those businesses. It is only a matter of time before the new breed a private programmer economist will catch on to the far-reaching implications of the work begun at Harvard in 1948. The speed with which they can communicate their warning to the public will largely depend upon how effective we have been at controlling the media, subverting education, and keeping the public distracted with matters of no real importance. And I would guess that if you really look at and analyze what was just said, you will agree they have really done a job on you. Now let's look at the economic model. Economics, as a social energy science, has a first objective, the description of the complex way in which any given unit of resource is used to satisfy some economic want. And this is called the Leontief matrix, L-E-O-N-T-I-E-F, labeled after Leontief, a man. The first objective, when it is extended to get the most product from the least or limited resources, comprises that objective of general military and industrial logistics known as operations research. The Harvard Economic Research Project, 1948, and still ongoing, was an extension of World War II operations research. Its purpose was to discover the science of controlling an economy. At first the American economy, and then the world economy. It was felt that with sufficient mathematical foundation and data, it would be nearly as easy to predict and control the trend of an economy as to predict and control the trajectory of a projectile. Such has proven to be the case. Moreover, the economy has been transformed into a guided missile on target. The immediate aim of the Harvard project was to discover the economic structure, what forces change that structure, how the behavior of the structure can be predicted, and how it can be manipulated. What was needed was well-organized knowledge of the mathematical structures and relationships of investment, production, distribution, and consumption. To make a short story of it all, it was discovered that an economy obeyed the same laws as electricity, and that all of the mathematical theory and practical and computer know-how developed for the electronic field could be directly applied in the study of economics. Please hearken back to the lessons of Germain. What is God? What is thought? What is electricity? All you see is one thing. And knowing what it is grants you the ability to control it. And they discovered this. So you who are just awakening and coming into your own knowledge of these things are a little bit behind. This discovery was not openly declared, and its more subtle implications were and are kept a closely guarded secret. For example, that in an economic model, human life is generated when opening a switch connected to an active inductor is mathematically analogous to the initiation, friends, of war. The greatest hurdle which theoretical economists faced was the accurate description of the household as an industry. This is a challenge because consumer purchases are a matter of choice, which in turn is influenced by income, price, and other economic factors. This hurdle was cleared in an indirect and in statistically approximate way by an application of shock testing to determine the current characteristics called current technology coefficients of a household industry. Finally, because problems in theoretical economics can be translated very easily into problems in theoretical electronics and the solution translated back again, it follows that only a book of language translation and concept definition needed to be written for economics. The remainder then could be gotten from standard works on mathematical on mathematics and electronics. This makes the publication of books on advanced economics quite unnecessary, and it certainly simplifies project security. An ideal industry is defined as a device which receives value from other industries in several forms and then converts it into one specific product for sales and distribution onto other industries. It can have several inputs, but one output. What the public normally thinks of as one industry is really an industrial complex where several industries under one roof produce one or more products. And a pure single output industry could be represented oversimply, really, by a circuit book or a circuit block, a book I refer to, Hatton refers to as a unit or of instructions or a block, say with diagrams. You can follow then the flow of products from industry one to industry two to industry three and so on around. And we're not going to try to draw those pictures for you. Let us just move on and say that there are three industrial classes, and we'll break those down. Because industries do fall into those three categories or classes, and they are categorized by type of output. Class one, capital resources, or capital and resources. Class two, goods. That's commodities or use, dissipative. Class three, services, action of the population. So in class one, we'll talk about that a little bit. These are industries existing at three levels. One, nature, sources of energy and raw materials. Two, government, which is printing of currency equal to gross national product, the GNP, and extension of currency in excess of GNP. And number three, banking, loaning of money for interest and extension, counterfeiting of economic value through deposit loan accounts. And here, extension is equal to inflation, and that's important to remember. Now for class two, which was goods. These industries exist as producers of tangible or consumer dissipated products. This sort of activity is usually recognized and labeled by the public as an industry. And then you have class three, those services. These service industries are those which have service rather than a tangible product as to their output. These industries are called, one, households, and two, governments. Their output is human activity of a very mechanical sort, and their basis is population. The whole economic system can be represented by three industry models, if one allows the names of the outputs to be number one, capital, number two, goods, and number three, services. The problem with this representation is that it would not show the influence of, say, the textile industry on the ferrous metal industry. This is because both the textile industry and the ferrous metal industry would be contained within a single classification called the, quote, goods industry, end quote. Now, but this process of combining or aggregating these two industries under one system block, they would then lose their economic individuality. So let's look at the, let us call it the E-dash model, the E model. A national economy consists of simultaneous flows of production, distribution, consumption, and investment. If all of these elements, including labor and human functions, are assigned a numerical value in like units of measure, say $1939, upon this flow, can be further represented by a current flow in an electronic circuit, and its behavior can be predicted and manipulated with absolute precision. Very useful precision. The three ideal passive energy components of electronics, the capacitor, the resistor, and the conductor, correspond to the three ideal passive energy components of economics called the pure industries of capital, goods, and services, respectively. Economic capacitance represents the storage of capital in one form or another. Economic conductance represents the level of conductance of materials for the production of goods. Economic inductance represents the inertia of economic value in motion. This is a population phenomenon known as services. Let's look at economic inductance. I understand that this is pretty boring at this point, unless you have a mathematical mind that functions and can visualize these things and interrelate them. I'm having to give you this information as background so that when we get on with what is actually laid forth in controlling you, you'll be able to understand, if you go back and listen to this or study it with written material, you'll be able to look at it and see how they came up with it, what they have done, and how close you are to their plan having been fulfilled. An electrical inductor, by that I mean a coil of wire, has an electric current as its primary phenomenon and a magnetic field as its secondary phenomenon, which is inertia. Now, corresponding to this, an economic inductor has a flow of economic value as its primary phenomenon and a population field as its secondary phenomenon of inertia. When the flow of economic value, that is money, diminishes, the human population field collapses in order to keep the economic value, money, flowing. And the extremes, war. This public inertia is a result of consumer buying habits, expected standard of living, and so forth, and is generally a phenomenon of self-preservation. So you have some inductive factors to consider. Three major ones. One, the population. Two, magnitude of the economic activities of the government. Three, the method of financing these government activities. And there you have it. And I believe that you will be able to see these as we break them down. So let's just have a little translation here and give a few examples. Let's say, we'll do it in energy form. We'll call it charge. These are the coulombs. That, by that I mean C-O-U-L-O-M-B-S for you people who label these things. The same represented as dollars, and we just used the term 1939 so that you could have some mental measure of what we're talking about. So then let's talk about flow, current, flow, slash, current. Amperes, coulombs per second, the same as dollars or the equivalent of dollars of flow per year. The motivating force, we'll call that volts or dollars, and we'll call that output and demand. Then we move on to conductance. That's amperes per volt or dollars of flow per year per dollar demand. And then capacitance. That would be coulombs per volt or equivalent of dollars of production inventory stock per dollar demand. Now we move into time flow relationships and self-destructive oscillations. I know it's getting harder for you. We'll get to the interesting part in a minute. We have to take an ideal industry, and that can be symbolized electronically in many various ways. The simplest way is to represent a demand by a voltage and a supply by a current. When this is done, the relationship between the two becomes what is called an admittance, which can result from three economic factors. One, hindsight flow. Two, present flow. And three, foresight flow. Foresight flow is a result of that property of living entities to cause energy, which is food, to be stored for a period of low energy. Example, a winter season. It consists of demands made upon an economic system for that period of low energy, the winter season. In a production industry, it takes several forms, one of which is known as production stock or inventory. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure capital industry, is represented by capacitance, and the stock or resource is represented by a stored charge. Satisfaction of an industry demand suffers a lag because of the loading effect of inventory priorities. Present flow. This ideally involves no delays, and you are a present flow, I want it now, group of people. You've been trained to that. They have now already perfected that forethought, if you will, and have trained you not to pay any attention in your desiring to that hindsight flow, which we'll get to. So in the present flow ideally involves no delays. It is, so to speak, input today for output today. A hand-to-mouth flow, if you will. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure-use industry, is represented by a conductance, which is then a simple economic value, a dissipative element, something you dissipate, you use. Hindsight flow is known as habit or simply inertia. In electronics, this phenomenon is the characteristics of an inductor. Economic analog, a pure service industry, in which a current flow, economic analog is flow of money, creates a magnetic field. The economic analog is active human population, which if the current, represented as money flow, begins to diminish, collapse or collapses. The equivalent war is required to maintain the current, the flow of money, energy, etc. Other large alternatives to war as economic inductors or economic flywheels are an open-minded social welfare program or enormous but fruitful open-minded space programs. The problem with stabilizing the economic system is that there is too much demand on account of too much greed, and secondly, too much population. So now we're getting there, aren't we? This, in turn, creates excessive economic inductance, which can only be balanced with economic capacitance. In other words, true resources or value, that is, in goods or services. The social welfare program is nothing more than an open-ended credit balance system which creates a false capital industry to give non-productive people a roof over their heads and food in their stomachs. This can be useful, however, because the recipients become state property in return for the, quote, gift. A standing army for the elite. For he who pays the piper picks the tune. Those who get hooked on the economic drug must go to the elite for their fix. In this, the method of introducing large amounts of stabilizing capital or capacitance is by borrowing on the future credit of the world. This is a fourth law of motion on set and consists of performing an action and leaving the system before the reflected reaction returns to the point of action, a delayed reaction. The means of surviving the reaction is by changing the system before the reaction can return. By this means, politicians become popular in their own time, and the public pays for it later. In fact, the measure of such a politician is a delay time. The same thing is achieved by our government by printing money beyond the limit of the gross national product, or allowing it to be printed. An economic process called inflation. This puts a large quantity of money into the hands of the public and maintains a balance against the greed, creates a false self-confidence in them, and for a while stays the wolf from the door. But let me tell you, it is only for a little while. They must eventually resort to war in order to balance the account, because war ultimately is merely the act of destroying the creditor. And politicians are the publicly hired hitmen that justify the act to keep the responsibility and blood off the public conscience. We'll get on there and look at the consent factors and social economic structuring a little bit later. If the people really cared about their fellow man, they would control their appetites, greed, procreation, etc., so that they would not have to operate on a credit or welfare social system which steals from the worker to satisfy the bum. But look what's happened. They have trained you to desire just the opposite. And not only to desire it, but to demand it. Without responsibility, without thought of consequence, always let the government do something about it. But I don't want to pay for it. I want mine now, and to hell with you. So you've arrived at massive, massive problems. I think we're near enough to the end of this side of the tape that we'll just move on to tape two before we move on in the subject matter. Thank you.